Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Boy, am I happy that we have one of the best pollsters in the world, Tim Borsellati, director of the Western New England University Poll and professor of political science, with us. Because he's not just a pollster, he also is conceptually capable. CC, conceptually capable. And I'm so glad you're with us, Tim. So let me ask you a question. You came out with a whole bunch of polls before the election. How did they, because people are always telling me they don't know what they're talking about, but how did you do?
Well, thank you, Alan. Thanks for the good words. We picked all the winners correctly, and by that I simply, and some of them were easier than others. We did show that Charlie Baker was ahead, but the race was tighter than our likely voter model showed. Our likely voter model showed Baker with a 5-point lead going into the final weekend of the campaign. If you looked at all registered voters, it was only a 1-point lead. So what that said was if Martha Coakley could mobilize her supporters, she could make a horse race of it. And that is what happened. She lost by just a little under 2 percentage points and made it a far more dramatic evening than I think most people were expecting.
Well,
I just wanted to say
on that one issue, I noticed that Deval Patrick offered himself to a lot of radio stations and television stations that day, really made the rounds. I think he was really committed to helping her.
I agree. He had a very high-profile role in her campaign. He put a lot of political capital on the line, and they were hunting for every last vote. It was fascinating to see just how active both campaigns were on Election Day. Historically, you expect candidates to sort of take a break on that final day after they cast their ballot, maybe retreat with their advisors, go over their speeches, victory and concession speeches for that night, maybe get a nap. But boy, oh boy, Coakley and Baker and their surrogates were out all day that day just looking for every last vote.
So why did she lose?
It was in the cities. Martha Coakley had certain benchmarks that she needed to hit in Boston, Worcester, Lowell, New Bedford, Springfield, the urban areas that Democrats rely on to build up huge leads to counter the suburban vote and the traditional strongholds for Republican candidates, the North Shore, some of the South Shore, Worcester County, not the city of, but the rural areas, and then some of the communities along the Massachusetts-Connecticut border in our area, Longmeadow, Hamden, East Longmeadow, Wilbraham, Agawam. And she just missed some of those targets in Boston. She needed 68% of the vote in Boston. She came up a couple of percentage points short. The same was true in Worcester. The same was true in Springfield. And that's how it slipped away.
So is she done?
She says she is, that this was it. This was her final campaign. But I think if you talk to people active in Democratic politics, she really has rehabilitated herself. She has shaken off the unfair label of Martha Coakley. Because she made it a horse race, because she ran right to the very end, I think she has built up some capital in the party, if only as an elder stateswoman. I find it hard to imagine her going through this again.
Who wants to be an elder stateswoman?
Well, it does give you some status, and at the same time, she could go into the private sector in any number of areas and finish her career there in a much more lucrative way.
She's a lawyer. I mean, after all, she was the attorney general, and law firms can use those people. No question
Absolutely.
About it. So will the real Charlie Baker stand up? Who is he?
Ooh, this is a good question, and we've all been watching his early steps post-election, and he's been very... He and his advisors ran a good campaign, and in the days following the election, they've made some smart decisions. He came out here to Western Massachusetts, came to Springfield, met with Mayor Dominic Sarno, reinforced his commitment to the casino in Springfield. He has reached out to the Democratic leaders of the legislature, and practically speaking, he needs to. The Democrats, although they lost a few seats in the House and Senate, still have overwhelming veto-proof majority.
So is his model William Weld and guys like that who knew how to do it?
So far. We haven't seen the sort of dogmatic or doctrinaire approach that we might have expected in his campaign from 4 years ago.
I just wanted to ask you that. I'm sorry to keep interrupting, Tim, but 4 years ago, he was considerably moved over to the right. Was that the Tea Party at the time, or what?
I think, let's turn back the clock to 2010. Scott Brown had just upset Martha Coakley in the special Senate election in January of that year. The Tea Party was on the ascendancy nationally, and Charlie Baker was focusing not so much on the social issues that we might associate with the Tea Party, but with fiscal issues, fiscal discipline, cutting spending, rooting out waste and fraud, and no additional taxes, no tax increases. Now, he made some of those same arguments this time around in terms of fiscal discipline, but in a kinder, gentler way, to reach out to the middle, in particular to female voters, whom he courted much more successfully this time around. And now we're all waiting to see, of course, how he executes, what his priorities will be. He's talked about tax reform. He's talked about increasing the number of charter schools in the state. Those are issues that may or may not play well with folks on the Democratic side. And again, the Democratic Party in Massachusetts, we have to remember, is not a monolith. It is a big tent with some moderate Democrats who like school vouchers and some moderate Democrats who wouldn't be troubled seeing some tax reform that contributes to job growth in the state. So it'll be fascinating to see who he reaches out to as he begins to carry out his agenda.
We only have 2 minutes, but how powerful is the Massachusetts governor compared to other governors?
It's let's think about it this way. It's more powerful than Texas. The Texas governor is the weakest governor constitutionally. Not nearly as powerful as the New Jersey governor. The New Jersey governor and lieutenant governor, the only statewide elected officials. What the Massachusetts governor has to keep in mind is that it's a three-headed monster. Mm. The president of the Senate, and there will be a new Senate president, Stan Rosenberg, state senator, majority leader from Amherst, and then the Speaker of the House of Representatives, Robert DeLeo. The three of them will hash out things like the state budget and other major policy issues. The Massachusetts governor and Deval Patrick, being of the same party, found this as well, can't get a lot done on his or her own.
Sort of circular firing squad stuff. The Democrats, yeah.
So
are you pleased with the way it all came out in terms of your polling? You know, you have a lot, you guys have a lot riding on this stuff.
We do. In every cycle, it gets harder to get people on the phone to do surveys. And someday there's going to be a cycle where we're all just completely off.
Because a lot of us think it's baloney, or people are calling up and we don't really believe that they're really pollsters, and we hang up on them.
Right. Well, and with good reason. There are a lot of sham operations out there, and you need to know who is doing the survey and on whose behalf, and if they won't be transparent, you should hang up.
Yeah.
But there are lots of good pollsters out there, and the methods worked this time, and every cycle we wonder, will they work again? And we do our very best to see that it happens.
Well, we love talking to Tim Versalotti, director of the Western New England University Poll, professor of political science, and an all-around great guy. Thank you so much for being with us, Tim. Come back the next time. I got a lot more questions for you.